And we are back for hour number two today, Thursday, January 23rd, 2020. I'm telling you, this will go on for months and months and months, but I just about say 2019 every single time. 12 minutes past the hour here, and this hour is going to be a real touchstone for all you out there in the listening audience. Now, let me give you a little backstory as to who our guest is going to be for this hour, and I really am so thrilled to have her on the program today, as I was telling you in hour number one and in the days leading up to this interview. Now, here's why. We've had a lot of great people on this program. Betty White's been on this program, a lot of people talking about her just turning 98 years old. We had the late Tony Curtis and Ernest Borgnine and Mayim Bialik from Big Bang Theory, just a great group. Phil Donahue has been on, Dick Cavett, Sally Jesse Raphael, a lot of great guests on this program, but I am as excited today as I have ever been excited for a guest. Now, here is why. I don't know the exact timeline on this, but I'm guessing it was probably 10 years or maybe a little more than that. Back in the infancy of YouTube, I was searching YouTube one day, and I don't even really know how this all came about, but one day, searching music on YouTube, more than 10 years ago, a girl came up, and it was a girl who was doing cover songs on YouTube, and they were really, really good. Now, what makes this unique? Well, here's what makes this unique. This girl was doing it with a ukulele, which is not something that I think a lot of us really associate with a whole lot of singers. Matter of fact, maybe just Don Ho, who's been on the program at one point. But ukulele, and she was playing the ukulele brilliantly. She was doing these cover songs brilliantly. And some of these cover songs were very difficult songs, like Accidentally in Love, Build Me Up Buttercup, that you don't normally hear on the ukulele. Well, guess what? Speed up all this time later, probably more than a decade later. I've never spoken with her. She's never been on the show. This is her first visit. I hope it's not the last, but she took that YouTube video catalog that she was building up, and a lot of great events happened in between here and there, and now she's an opening act for people. She's releasing her own albums, doing her own music. How cool is that? I believe she's out on the West Coast now. It's a tremendous, tremendous story. Now, before we go to her, and this is going to be a tremendous amount of fun, and we thank her for getting up extra early this morning to do this interview, I just want to give you a taste. Go back a little bit, because the song that she covered that I love the most was Accidentally in Love. Now, you can still see these on YouTube. They are available. Just going to give you a little taste of Julia Nunes. This is the video that got me hooked more than 10 years ago, Accidentally in Love. And by the way, she's playing all these instruments. This is just her in the video. Here we go, Julia Nunes.
So she said, oh, what's the problem, baby? What's the problem? I don't know. Well, maybe I'm in love. Think about it every time I think about it. Can't stop thinking about it. How much longer will it take to cure this? Just to cure it, cause I can't ignore it if it's love. Makes me wanna turn around and face me, but I don't know nothing about love. Come on, come on, turn a little faster. Come on, come on, world will follow after. Come on, come on, everybody is after love. belt and now sunlight shimmer in love. Oh baby, I'll surrender to the strawberry ice cream, never ever.
Gotta love that strawberry ice cream line, and here we are 10 years later. What a pleasure it is to welcome to these microphones Julia Nunes. Julia, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. Early morning where you are this morning.
It is. The sun is not up.
Well, I thank you for getting up early with us this morning.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for wanting me to.
Now, when you hear that that song that you did on YouTube many, many years ago, Accidentally in Love, what does it make you think about?
It makes me... It's like funny because I have like a snapshot of doing it and I have a snapshot of like the video itself. So like I remember the red half-frame glasses that I wore back then. and, like, my parents' house, and, like, I believe, this is how my memory works. I truly haven't watched the video in, like, a decade, but, like, I know that I'm wearing a red cardigan in it, and then the memory is, like, I had, like, 50 cardigans back then.
So you were a cardigan type of girl.
I sure was.
Now, when I looked at those videos, there were a lot of them back then. What were you trying to accomplish with those at that time? How old were you, by the way, back then?
Let's see. Well, a decade ago, I was 21. But I think that video might be even a little bit older, like 20-ish, and... What was I trying to accomplish? Just absolutely nothing.
So you didn't have the bug to be a music star at that particular point?
I think I've just always been, like, I've had the bug to, like, entertain people. And so, like, sometimes that takes the shape of me, like, trying to make everybody laugh at dinner. And sometimes that takes the shape of me, like, spending hours layering my vocals to make a video.
Well, you know what was so unique about those videos to me was the ukulele. Now, how did the ukulele come to you?
Yeah, you know what's funny is I didn't know this until I started playing it, but my last name is Nunes. I'm Portuguese, and the creator of the ukulele, like the there's two dudes who invented it, and one is named Manuel Nunes, which is the name of my grandfather. And they're not the same guy, because he's not old enough, but, I think it's, like, somewhere in my blood, and I found a ukulele at a guitar shop once, and the guy at the store was trying to close a deal with my friend who was buying a guitar, and he's like, oh, I'll throw in the ukulele.
Simple as that.
Yeah.
So when you were doing the videos, why was the choice made to use the ukulele in these videos? Because it seems to be a constant theme.
I'm a creature of ease. I just like that it's small and easy to play, and especially, like, you know, I made most of those videos from my college dorm room, and I just, like, if I needed to practice somewhere else, I didn't have to carry a big guitar case. I could just, like, carry this featherlight thing to the woods or to a stairwell or, you know, just, like, the easiest way to make music, really, I think, is the ukulele.
How did you choose the songs that you would cover?
Oh, just whatever I couldn't get out of my head, you know?
Because there are some very different choices there. Usually, when people cover songs, they kind of stick with pretty much the same type of music. But you kind of were all over the place.
Yeah, I would say that that describes me musically and otherwise.
Well, let's go back to the childhood, which hasn't been all that long ago, but what was it like growing up?
My dad is a lawyer and a musician, so I've always had, like, a healthy dose of, like, work hard and be organized and also, like, play and have fun with music. And my mom is just such a, like, supportive fan. Like, she's a fan of my dad and the stuff that he does. She's always, like, kind of made sure the behind the scenes for his music stuff was handled while he, like, made the music and, you know, did, like, the normal job. And then for me, when I started to play music, my mom, you know, even before it was, like, making me any money, my mom was making sure that, like, I knew I could print CDs if I wanted to, that, like, that they would help me if I wanted to do that, like, in high school.
When did you realize you had music ability? Because I'm jealous of anybody who has that ability, because I don't have it at all.
When did I realize I had it? You know what? It's like a classic story, actually. My fourth grade teacher, Mrs. Falk, was doing an adaptation of The Sound of Music to teach the kids in the class about the solar system. So she called it The Sound of Stars, and she was rewriting the songs from the normal musical to be, like, star-related. And I ended up helping. I, like, co-wrote the show and then sang. Like, I did it in a joke voice at the time, but, like, I realized that I had this, like, huge voice by impersonating a British man, which was my character at the time.
Do you just have an ear for dialects and music? Because when people cover songs, it's interesting. That can be very hard, I would imagine, because everybody hears the original song in their head. Is it easy to pick that up?
Well, easy, I don't know, but I do just like it. I find it easy to focus on it and learn it, yeah.
Now, when the YouTube videos were going up, because you made quite a few of them, when did you realize that something was happening?
Almost immediately, I would say, like, I realized that, more than just the friends that I was sending them to, there were, like, more views than it was possible for it to all be my friends. and I didn't quite realize that YouTube was, like, a place where strangers would see your things. I thought that it was more of a, like, a photo bucket type of thing. You just, like, place your thing there and you can send it to your mom or your friend. And then pretty immediately I was like, strangers can see this.
And as they were seeing it and as they were commenting, what was the feedback?
It's so supportive. Like, I think that YouTube eventually became a place where people were like, ooh, don't read the comments. But, at the beginning, it was such a supportive community, like other people who played ukulele. We were all bonding. It was the kind of thing where, like, anyone who was doing anything of note knew each other and, like, backed each other. Like, the culture, especially at the beginning, was so nice and friendly.
And now it's a little different.
Too true.
Yeah, it's a whole different world for people out there doing something like that. When you were growing up, is there something you wanted to do? Did you have a plan in your life for what you wanted to do when you grew up?
I had inklings of being a lawyer, like my dad. Seems very far off the mark now, but I just like talking and I feel strongly about certain things, and my parents always joked that I would not stop until I won the argument, so it was a real lawyer trajectory for a minute.
When did you realize that was not the trajectory you should be on?
Oh, let's see. I think that's somewhere like in high school. I started to like really gravitate towards like the video. There was like a film class that was offered at my high school, which like I'm so grateful for. Definitely like super responsible for where I am now. We learned iMovie and we studied like story arcs and we had to create music videos and a final film. And I just got so into it and I started to dream of like what it would be like to do something creative as my career. But I still didn't know what it was. Like, I majored in math in college, so I was still, like, trying to emulate the practicality, like, organizational, normal type of thing. Like, I thought I would be more like my dad, where I have, like, a regular job and then just, like, do something creative on the side.
When did that change? When did you decide that you wanted to go all in on this?
Well, I am a college dropout. My junior year ended with an offer to play Bonnaroo and a full-fledged tour leading up to the shows at Bonnaroo, and then, which is a music festival, and then a like month and a half long opening slot for Ben Queller. And it was the first time that I was offered something like that I was excited enough about to turn, like I had been turning down things that would take me away from school for the whole time. And then with that one, like I was such a huge Ben Queller fan and it just seemed like it was maybe possible for me. And I talked to this one professor who was like, get out of here. What are you doing? Leave. So I did. And I went on tour and I moved to New York City and I gave it a go.
When you went on tour, different obviously from playing local places and doing things on YouTube, what was it like to be in front of the big crowds?
Well, when you're opening for someone else, you kind of have to just, like, not care if they're paying attention. Like, I opened for Ben Folds, and those were stadiums and small, like, amphitheaters, you know, not, yeah. But, you know, the crowd isn't, like, really listening super hard to you. And I think that, like, my high school days of doing open mic where like the crowd is mostly there to like listen to their friends and then talk during your set. It's like I honed this ability to enjoy myself on stage regardless of who is listening to me. So when the crowd is really, really big, I just have fun by myself on stage. And then like, as I started to play more of my own headlining shows and the crowds were, like, 200 to 500 people and everyone there knew all of the words and would sing so loud. And, like, that's when I started to really feel, like, what it's like to be electrified by a crowd.
When you went out to do these performances, what kind of music were you doing in the early days?
Yeah, just me and my ukulele and singing, and I would have different combinations of bandmates. Like, sometimes I was a five-piece, sometimes just me, usually just me and one other bandmate playing guitar and both of us harmonizing.
Did you have favorite songs to do when you would go out?
For sure, yeah. Well, it was always really fun to do Build Me a Buttercup because the whole crowd would sing along. And I started to realize that, like, my own songs, like, my original songs were crowd favorites, too. So it's just, like, the songs that are most fun for me to sing to a crowd are usually the ones that just, like, let my voice go go wild and big and loud, and then like bonus points if the crowd has like a sing-along part.
When did the songwriting part of it come to you?
From the very beginning, I was in a ska band when I was in middle school, and I wrote songs for that band, and like the first song of my, like the first video of mine to take off on YouTube was an original called Into the Sunshine. And then after that, another video that took off was Balloons. Because at the time, this is crazy to think about, YouTube valued original content more than, like they couldn't, they didn't quite have the infrastructure for covers. So I was doing covers, but my covers were like just slowly building an audience. And then when I put out an original, they were able to feature it on the front page. And, it's funny, like, I had, like, an in, like, people at YouTube were like, oh, yeah, Julia Nunes, like, we're just waiting for her to make some original content so we can put it on the front page. And when I did, they just, like, boom. And then another song called Balloons, and then another song called Stay Awake, and then, yeah, it's just, like, always been a huge part of it for me. I think, yeah. Lots of people describe my career as, like, I started out with covers, but it actually was always originals and covers from the beginning, and the biggest ones were mine.
Take me through the songwriting process. Does the song have to be something you're feeling, something that's happened to you, or can it be total fiction?
I've never written a fiction song, unfortunately, maybe. Yeah, I can never hide behind, like, it's just a song.
So every...
It's always brutally true.
Every original song you've done that we would hear would be something from your life.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is? Because I hear that a lot. I know people, not necessarily songwriters or performers, but who cannot express themselves in any way except playing a song that they have heard, and okay, well, that's how I feel, is that's how they'll describe it. What is it about music that does that?
Yeah, you know, art, I think, exists to be that channel between, like, our inner thoughts and then our outside thoughts, because it's not like everyone's walking around all the time being like, I feel so scared about my future, or I feel so intensely about this person that I'm attracted to, or I feel, you know, like we don't always say what's on the inside at work or to our friends. Like, we don't always come out with it. And it is a relief. Like, it's the same reason a really good, deep conversation feels so good. Like, to have what's on the inside come out, it's such a relief, and music is one of the best ones, because you don't just get the words, you also get the, like, emotion in the music itself, the swell of the chords or the intensity of it, and or the softness and the gentleness of it. It all connects to emotion, and I think that people need that release.
What would you say in your music that you have written is the biggest common theme that is interwoven?
Whoa, what is the biggest common theme of my music interwoven throughout? Like, introspection. Like, I'm just always kind of, it's rare that I'll write a song about, like, you did this and I'm mad at you, and you're a jerk. It's all like, wow, look at me doing this thing again. What a pattern I've realized and can't let go of.
What was the hardest song for you to not only write, but to put out for public consumption?
Yeah. Thank you for asking that. I think like the hardest musical period of my life is the most recent one. I kind of created a couple circumstances for myself that weren't ideal for how I like to create. Like for one, I did a Kickstarter for the record before it was done, and it just put this like pressure on me, where I like woke up every day with like I have to instead of like I get to make music. And then I very quickly after that Kickstarter went through a breakup with my manager, and I just kind of flailed for like 2 years, and the songs that I was trying to put out just didn't feel relevant anymore, and I was writing songs about this breakup, and then it was such a public relationship that it just didn't feel like safe to release music about it. It just all felt like terrible, and it took me 2.5 years to put out 6 songs, and that record is called Ugh Wow. And just like shout out to my Kickstarter backers for your patience, and yeah, just like so much support during that time. But like for me, it was like pretty raw and yeah, hard.
Now, when you say break up with your manager, you're talking more than just he's not my manager anymore.
Yeah, we were dating and they were my manager.
Was that an ideal situation at the time?
It's tricky. It's tricky because you really want to think that that's ideal. Like the person who loves me the most also is like so invested in my career, like much more so than anyone else, right? Like they love me, so they want the best for me in all areas. And I would say that the reason that's not actually not ideal is because like a person or just, you know, just this person, me, I need like to be able to, like speak absolutely freely and pragmatically with my manager. Like my manager now, Emily White, and Pompey, I have like a co-team. They're both just like so cut and dry about everything, and our conversations move really like fast, and we get a lot done, and like that's not quite a romantic vibe. But I still feel as though like Emily and Pompey are like just as invested in my career and what I want. Like they care so much about my feelings and what I'd like to do with my time, like how I'd like to use my energy. So I've found that level of care in my business life, and also like recognize that like at the time, like my manager and I were pretty much like us against the world across the board, like in terms of friendships. My friendships kind of fell away, my family kind of fell away. It was that, you know, I'm just gonna be real vulnerable with you, it was not good. And so like now I've realized and like opened my heart back up to the world at large. Like me and my family are the closest we've ever been, and I actually like live with 6 of my friends, and I just like needed more connection than I had in that situation. So, and I'm making music all the time.
Well, it's very interesting because I think about people specifically like Taylor Swift, who has made a ton of money writing about relationships and then not telling us who they're about.
Yeah,
which is interesting. Because it seems like that is the theme where a lot of music goes these days. And that's an interesting story to hear. Because what for you was the breaking point where you knew, because there was obviously was a lot writing on that this ain't gonna work?
Yeah, that, like, introspection, like, I kind of realized that that I was spending all of my brain power on, like, how to become someone that would work, that I wanted to fix myself so that the relationship would work. And, like, all of my revelations were just being powered at, like, fixing the relationship, which hadn't felt good in like 2 years. And I just sitting with myself was like, okay, well, that voice has been really loud for a long time, like desperately wanting to fix it. And I've given it my best and it's not working. And I think that it's time to switch gears and focus on me.
Why is it, and I think a lot of people face this, so I think this is a real interesting interview, and I appreciate you for being so honest, because I think it's fascinating. Why is it so hard when the only thing in the relationship, maybe not the only thing, but the string through it is just simply time? They've been there for a long time. They have been supportive in the past. They're a constant. Why is it so hard to walk away?
Well, I think that it's beautiful that that it's hard to walk away from anyone you love. You know, like long-term friendships and long-term relationships. I think that time is a show of love, like the time you invest in someone and... like family, you know, that's the longest time you got. And I think it's just like a natural part of humans to like love so hard. And that the thing that actually falls apart is communication. And there's always this hope that like you'll get the communication back and then it'll start to feel good again.
Since that was such a tough period, not only being intertwined with the career and the relationship and being in recent times, has somebody, we now know that on the professional side, somebody has filled that void. Has somebody filled that void on the relationship side? I feel like Barbara Walters all of a sudden. I don't know what's going on.
I haven't spoken to anyone about it. I am seeing someone. It is new.
So, and my final question on this, I promise. What makes this work when the last one didn't?
Yeah, you know, I've spent the last, like, 2.5 years working on my communication, really. And I think that's, like, why, you know, how I reconnected with my family and was able to, like, let more friendship in is just my communication. I literally took classes. I'm operating in this relationship for my highest truth and not just to keep the relationship. Right? Does that make sense? Like,
it's interesting because is this person somebody who is in your field or is it just somebody totally outside of it?
Totally outside, which, you know, is not like an intentional. I didn't go from like deeply in my field to like all the way outside of it intentionally, but it's like a mutual friend, and so. They're more involved in my social life than my career life, and that feels good to me.
And hopefully it feels good to them, and all is well.
Yeah.
Because we want to hear about happy things. Now, one of the interesting aspects of your career, with 15 minutes left to go, because we live in a very weird world now, where it seems as... you know, there aren't CD releases anymore like there used to be. People can buy a single. They don't have to buy the whole 13-track CD anymore like they used to. How has the music industry changed just in your time being in it?
Yeah, there's a whole interesting thing with the music industry, I feel, that started with my generation. I remember, like, people in older generations being, like, really upset about it when I was doing it, and it's gotten more and more this way, where, like, you put out a lot of stuff for free, and then you hope that people are invested enough in you as an artist because of what you've given them so far that they'll be a patron of your art in other ways, like buy a ticket to your show, or there's literally patreon.com, which is like where people can be your patron. So my videos are free, but if you want to give me $1 per video and get the MP3 whenever I put it out, you can be on my Patreon. And then there's other levels, like I have a secret Instagram where if I'm making music and it's not going to be out for a while, you can like hear snippets and behind the scenes, because you're like paying for access to my secret Instagram on Patreon.
Another thing that fascinates me, because, you know, here locally, you go to a lot of shows where it's very clear that kids, high school kids, even younger than that, they're going to acting classes, they're going to music classes, they're singing, they're getting out there every chance they can in performances. In this new age of music and YouTube, and you don't need network and cable television, you don't need any of that anymore, it seems, what's the best advice? How do you become somebody who can live off of that career? What's your advice?
Yeah, I would say, like, the model of, like, give stuff out for free as much as you can, it also works good because then you know that you're doing it for your own pleasure. Like, making art should always just be for your own enjoyment. And if you're doing it for free and you're just putting it out there and, like, letting people like it or not like it, like, just put it out. That's the biggest thing. Like, put it out and people, you know, your taste in music, if you're making something you like, there's going to be people who also like it. And you'll find your audience. There's, like, new platforms cropping up all the time. Like, TikTok is a real place for people's music to explode. It's wild. So it still happens. Like, becoming successful and becoming noticed still happens. And then, like, give people the opportunity to be your patron. Like, Kickstarter, I've run 3 Kickstarters, and I'll always do a Kickstarter for my records. It's like one of the times where people who have been my fan and maybe never given me any money but have listened to me for however long are like, oh yeah, I'll give you $10 while you finish up this record. I'll never do a Kickstarter before the record is done again. I'll just finish the record and run the Kickstarter after. But, yeah, giving people the opportunity to give you money. Like, Amanda Palmer has this amazing book called The Art of Asking that I would recommend to anyone trying to make a living out of their art. Is, like, you can't be afraid of asking for, you know, that, like, $1 on Patreon or that $10 on Kickstarter. Like, embracing the fact that you can make more art if you let people give you money.
When I think about it, when we think about the creative process and what comes out, as you said, early on in your career, the YouTube days, it was a much nicer community. Maybe we were a much nicer society. I don't know what's changed, but now people are a little more critical. Everybody's a critic. And when you are writing something and it's personal to you, and as you said, all of your work that is personal is true and from your life, when somebody knocks it or you hear a review or just somebody on YouTube nails something, how do you take that? How do you deal with that?
I've been hearing and reading and seeing all of those things for so long, and you can kind of, with all things in life, you can kind of take it one of two directions, like have it fuel you and build your spine and just know that, like, anyone who spends their time on negativity is, like, just wasting this cool thing in life, wasting time and focusing on the wrong stuff, and just, like, live your life and keep making music. Or you can go in the direction of, like, oh, no, they're right, and I should stop. And, you know, like, I'm not flawless at that navigation. Like, I definitely have let certain people's opinions keep me quiet. But it was never, like, the internet at large, you know. It was, like, people that I knew, I was afraid of their opinion. And you know, you just keep building your spine your whole life long. You keep standing back up and proving to yourself that you're doing the right thing. Like, you're your own compass in that way.
We have a weird thing in society now, and maybe a lot of it was brought on by reality television, but certainly these internet platforms have brought this along as well. You don't necessarily have to have talent to be famous or well-known. What is the difference in your mind, in your world, and what do you strive for, fame versus success? Because I would think on some degree you have to be famous to be successful, even if you have talent, because if nobody comes to the concert or buys it or knows about it, then you're in trouble.
I think that, like, what I'm shooting for is to feel, like, totally in alignment with, like, what I want to be doing. Like, right now I'm making music with my bandmate Chase, and we're, like, going just buck wild on an original song for, like, a week every month, and we're going to be putting out a song a month, an original a month that's, like, fully produced by me and Chase Burnett, and it's just, like, fun. It's a fun way to make music, and I don't care too much about the success of the songs. I care about, like, putting things out, since it's, like, I'm coming off of this era where it took 2.5 years to put out 6 songs. I'm like, yeah, let's just bang out a song a month. Like, there's so much in here. Like, I'm in it for the art over the other stuff.
If you had, at this point, and still very young, obviously, if you had to put something in a time capsule that would be opened 500 years from now, what piece would you put in there?
One piece that I would put in the time capsule to be opened in 500 years. I think I would choose a journal. I think my journals are fascinating. I write sometimes super coherently and sometimes in the strangest shorthand. And I think in 500 years, you'd get a pretty good snapshot of, like, what was happening for this little human during the year 2019 to 2020.
We hear so much now about what California and Los Angeles and Hollywood and even in New York and other places, what the industry is like for people who are trying to make it, and some of the really nasty pitfalls, particularly for younger women as of late. Have you experienced, not necessarily those things, but have you experienced this culture where there are powerful people who you think can be the gold of something, and it's just not the most pleasant atmosphere?
Well, I have kind of existed. This is like the beauty of Patreon and Kickstarter and being like an internet person versus like being put into the machine of the industry. Like my record label is mine. It's called Rude Butler Records. That's the British man I played in fourth grade, the Rude Butler. And I've never had to artistically sacrifice or like personally sacrifice for an opportunity to like get in the room with someone or have someone else like, you know, like I've never gone that route because I've just been supported directly by my fans through Kickstarter and Patreon. And like the industry feels like a completely separate entity from the way that I've done my career. It's just me and my fans out here.
I was looking at, well, do your fans, have you ever had an overzealous fan when you operate in that way, that you are so accessible that your fans are, in a way, funding a lot of your career? Do you have people who cross the line?
Yeah, and then they fall away. You know, it's always, the majority is so sweet and, like, self-aware.
Would you ever want to be a part of the machine, or do you like how life is now?
I really like how life is now. I really love, I've been working with Emily and Pompey for like a year, I think. And this thing that I'm doing with Chase where, actually, you know, I was going to say, relating it back to this question you asked earlier about like why it's so hard to leave a relationship when you've been in it for a long time. The song that I put out last month, as like one of the things that I'm doing with Chase right now, where we just like go fully produced on a song and a video and it comes out at the end of the month, no matter what, like we're putting out a song a month. The last one is called We're Not in Love. And it basically described that feeling of like you're still in the relationship and you're kind of ignoring the fact that you're not in love anymore and how bad you miss how it used to be and that there's like something missing and that like the idea of leaving is like really, really hard to grasp. And like that, I actually like just released a song exactly about what you were asking about, is like why it's so hard. So yeah, I'm just really happy that I get to do whatever I want. I didn't even tell my managers that I was putting that song out. It was New Year's Eve, right? So they were both like super busy, and I'm like a little unpredictable, and I just like put the song out, and later I checked in with them and I was like, "Ooh, I'm so sorry." And they were like, "It's fine. Let's get it out to your distribution company. Like, let's go now." And I was like, okay, great. They really, like, they respond so well to the way I do things. I just feel, like, so lucky to be as free as I am.
If people want to find your music, hear more, help you in any way, what's the best way to do that?
If you'd like to keep up with my antics, at Julia Nunes Music on Instagram is a great way. Patreon is, I could talk forever about what an amazing way it supports a musician's career. And I'll be doing a Kickstarter towards the end of the year after I release all of these songs. I'll be running a Kickstarter to print that CD and do a shirt and maybe offer some cool merch packages, just to like support the CD. And I really like designing merch, so keep an eye out for a Kickstarter or Patreon, and I'm just Julia Nunes. It's like patreon.com/Julia Nunes, and Facebook and Twitter. I'd love to see you on the internet.
Julia, it has been a pleasure, like I say, maybe more than 10 years in the making at this point when I had first seen your work. It's a pleasure to talk to you today, and I'm so glad that it happened, and I'm so glad that, I hope we'll get to do it again at some point. And because you've been so introspective in this interview, and I appreciate that, and honest about not only your professional but your personal life, just finish this sentence as we wrap up at this point in your life. Julia Nunes is.
Julia Nunes is forever growing and adapting and loving.
That works for me. Julia, what a pleasure it's been. Thank you for getting up early with us.
Of course, the sun is up now, so I got to see the sunrise. Thanks.
Thank you, Julia. Have a great day.
You too, Scott.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Julia Nunes, the girl with the ukulele, discovered well over 10 years ago now. How about that? Charlie Evers with lots of gifts in about 10 minutes. Don't go anywhere.
The old place is WWGH 107.1 FM.
One of our great people, the 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow. Mary Ellen, so glad to see you.
Well, I'm glad that I'm all amazed at all of these celebrities.